This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at Dicetower.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 207.
Hello, everybody. We are so delighted to be with you this evening. Unsurprisingly, I have a fact about the number 207. We were told on, I think, last week's show that people like the fact, or it was on our live stream that we were on over the weekend, that people like our facts. So I'm going to keep going with the facts.
Okay.
But I'm actually going to ask our guests to help us out with this fact. This week on the show, we have with us the Grand Poobah of the Grand Gamers Guild, Mark Spector. How are you doing today, Mark?
I'm great. I've never been a Poobah before, but I'll take it.
Actually, I think you might have been a Poobah the last time we had you on the show.
I think you a Grand Poobah. I might have said the same the last time I was on the show, too.
You'll always be the Grand Poobah to us.
Yeah, you'll always be the Grand Poobah in my heart.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's my go-to salutation. Anyway, so Mark, I know you're not a huge baseball fan, not like I am, but if I said the name Mays to you related to baseball, who would you think about?
Well, it's got to be Willie Mays.
Right. Absolutely. Willie Mays.
Right.
This is a fact about Mays, but it is not Willie Mays.
Okay.
It is.
All right. Amaze us, Andrew.
Oh, man. It is Carl Mays. Carl Mays is famous for a lot of things. So I am a Boston Red Sox fan. Carl Mays pitched for the Boston Red Sox, and he won the clinching game of the 1918 World Series.
Oh, man. So he was like the last pitcher for the Red Sox for
to win a World Series clinching game in almost 100 years. Yeah. So the reason why he comes up in this fact about 207 is because he had 207 career wins in his life. But that is not the fact about which the pitcher, Carl Mays, is the most notorious. Number one, he was well known for scuffing up baseballs. So pretty much he was the reason why umpires eventually put a stop to scuffing up baseballs.
Okay.
Right. But really the most incredible thing about Carl Mays was that in 1920, on August 16th, which is the day before this podcast is coming out, this podcast is coming out on August 17th, he was pitching for the New York Yankees, that bum. he was pitching, and he threw a ball, and Cleveland shortstop Ray Chapman was at the plate. Ray Chapman went down to bunt the ball, and I don't know if you lost sight of it or what happened, but the ball that Carl Mays threw hit Ray Chapman in the temple, and it is the first and only time a baseball player has been killed by a pitch from a pitcher.
Whoa!
At least in the big show, so to speak.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the fact about which Yankee pitcher, that bum, Carl Mays, is the most notorious, is he beamed Ray Chapman on August 16th, 1920. So that is 100 years and one day ago.
And he had a career 207 wins, bringing it back to the number 207.
He won 207 games in his baseball career. Hello, everybody. We are the Family Gamers. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me. I can't stop thinking about that poor man killed by the baseball.
Well, I mean, if it makes you feel any better, he would have been 120-something
well,
years old.
Yeah, I know he would be dead by now anyway, so, but still.
Anyway.
Rough way to go.
I suppose so. This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Did you know that according to a recent poll sponsored by the National Foundation for Credit Counseling, only 18% of Americans feel very confident about their retirement? This is a pre-COVID poll. It might be higher now. I'm not sure.
It probably is.
So if you aren't sure about retirement, you are not alone. If you want to talk to a professional to see if you are on track to achieve your goals or maybe even define what those goals even are, go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to schedule a quick phone call and see if First Move is the right fit for you.
Thanks again to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the podcast.
All right. Well, so here we are. It is an odd numbered podcast. We have asked Mark Spector to join us this week, and that's because Mark Spector is the stretch goal busting machine this week, and he's got a Kickstarter out for the expansion to a game that we are playing right now and we are loving called Endangered.
Yeah, I'm a little awestruck by the whole thing, if I'm being honest.
So we, you know, we had talked, this is a little like how the sausage is made kind of inside baseball stuff, not to go back to baseball, but we had talked before.
Baseball with you,
Hey, I'm getting a little bit of withdrawal this year. It's been a rough year.
It's been rough.
Anyway, so we talked about how neither one of us really understood what was up with the first endangered Kickstarter and how this absolutely incredible game, just something went, I don't know, wrong with like the exposure or something. I know we had Joe Hopkins on the show about 60 something episodes ago to
episode 141, about a year and a half.
There she is, to talk about that game and the Kickstarter and all that other stuff. I tell you what, all the publicity post Kickstarter is certainly helping you pick up steam now, huh?
Yeah, I agree. And I was actually saying earlier, right on the comments wall, that this was really a gut decision for me. I felt like Endangered was having a moment. And I'm a very logical kind of guy. I like to plan. I like to execute. That gives me a lot of satisfaction. But in this one, I kind of felt the moment and decided that I was going to make a go of it. And clearly it was the right decision.
We just picked up the Giant Panda expansion maybe a week and a half ago or something like that. We haven't had a chance to get that to the table, but man, those pandas are cute.
I'm really excited to play it.
So we'll talk about Endangered New Species second half of the show. But as always, first half of the show, let's talk about some games that we've been playing.
Sure.
All right. I've got to start with Cupcake Academy, because last week we talked about this and you said you and I need to play it. My instinct about Cupcake Academy was right. It plays so much smoother and better at two players than it does at four. Okay. I played it with you, and then later I went back and played it with just Asher, and he and I had a great time playing it together. You and I had an awesome time playing it together and even going up to a harder level where everything has to be in the right order, not just these cupcakes show up on my side and those cupcakes show up on your side.
Just for the record, we lost that one.
When we did the harder one, we lost, but yes. Man, my brain was working hard. I had a great time.
Yeah. Have you seen this, Mark? This is a game from Blue Orange.
No, I am not familiar with Cupcake Academy.
Okay. So imagine a game where you have two players who are cooperatively trying to more or less work out puzzles that line up with the Tower of Hanoi puzzle. Are you familiar with the Tower of Hanoi puzzle?
I'm not familiar with that either.
Oh,
I'm batting 1,000.
Yeah.
All right. So
more baseball stuff. Yes.
All right. So the idea is that you have this stack of fake cupcake liners, basically. I think you have 5 or 6 of them.
They're upside down, like nesting, like Russian.
Yeah, they all nest together with the smallest one on the bottom and the biggest one on the top. And you can never put a smaller one on top of a bigger one. You can only cover. You can't stack.
Okay.
So you have 3 spots on your side to work with. Your partner has 3 spots to work with, and there's 1 spot in the middle that you can use both for arranging the puzzles and for passing pieces back and forth. So you draw a card and it shows you, okay, well, on this side, we need a orange and 2 pinks showing, where orange is the smallest one and pink is the biggest one. And on the other side, we need another orange and a blue and a blank space. And then the two of you kind of go, how on earth do we make this work with the cupcake things we have, and passing them back and forth and stacking them and unstacking them.
I'll give you this. So the Tower of Hanoi puzzle, you've seen it. I'm going to describe it and you'll be like, oh, that thing.
Okay.
So this is where you have 3 posts and then you have a stack of rings that go from the largest to the smallest. And you're trying to move that stack of rings to a different post, but you can never put a bigger ring on top of a smaller ring.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Have you seen this puzzle before?
It's been a while, but I think I know what you're describing. Yes. Yeah.
So that's the Tower of Hanoi puzzle. So
maybe we know it by name because we're
programmers. It's totally a computer science thing. Yeah, it absolutely totally is. Okay. But anyway, yeah. So this is this cooperative Tower of Hanoi kind of puzzle game thing, really fast moving. It's very reminiscent of Dr. Eureka, which is a pretty popular Blue Orange game.
But it's cooperative instead of competitive.
It is. It is. And so we play a lot of that.
Yeah. Well, and they've got 3 different sets of cards, 1 for 4 players, 1 for 3 players, 1 for 2 mm-hmm. players. And while it's certainly playable at 4 players, I enjoyed it a whole lot more at 2.
Well, we got that box from Blue Orange last week, and there was a lot of Cupcake Academy happening. I played Dragomino with 2 of the kids. This is, it literally says on the cover, my first King Domino. And I was like, I mean, how complicated is King Domino, right? It's not that complicated.
It's not that complicated. Good. You can play it with a 4-year-old who has a long enough attention span.
But we also have a 12-year-old who is obsessed with dragons. And
this is true.
So it just was like, you know what? We got to give this a try. Honestly, there are more pieces in the box by a lot than there are with King Domino.
That's true.
But it really manages to do a good job of simplifying what's happening and dissecting the game so that it's not just the domino matching, because the multiplication of the dominoes, so like that doesn't happen. There's no crowns in this game. Basically, what happens with this is there's a series for every terrain type. There is a series of eggs that are face down tokens on the board. And when you put another domino on, normal domino drafting, basically, when you put another domino on, whichever sides match, whichever sides
pair up
another domino of the correct land type, you take an egg and you flip it over and you put it on that border between the two. And then at the end of the game, you count up the hatched eggs that have dragons in them, because they don't all have dragons in them. Sometimes they're empty. And that's pretty much
broken eggs. So there's a lot more luck in Dragomino, but that's appropriate in a my first game.
Right.
It levels the playing field a lot from, you know, parents to young children.
Right. But I mean, it totally feels like a King Domino game. I mean, it's the same thick, chunky tiles. Obviously, it's got that dragon theme, which is a little bit different from King Domino, which, yeah, you have a kingdom, but pretty much it's an abstract game.
Right.
So I'm a fan, I think, of Dragomino. I'm a bigger fan of Cupcake Academy personally, because I'm 38 years old, so my first game is probably not going to be in my wheelhouse. But I'm really enjoying both of those games from Blue Orange. What about you, Mark? What have you been playing?
Well, the most recent game I played was a couple days ago, and it was Patchwork, which I played with my girlfriend, and I got absolutely slaughtered. It was 100% ridiculous. Long story short, my board was devoid of many, many patches. And so not only did she just flat out beat me because her board was, much more covered than mine, but then when you like subtract the 2 points per void space, it was ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
I was in the negative. It was, I didn't even allow us to count points. It was so ridiculously embarrassing.
That's not good. When you can look at the board in a game like Patchwork and you're like, you know what? Never mind.
That is pretty much exactly how it shook out. So, that's my sad truth. But it was fun. You know, I mean, Patchwork's a good game. It's, you know, something that we were able to set up and do quickly. And, and we had it out. It was a ton of fun.
Nice. I really love it when you play games with someone who, for whatever reason, either they're younger or it's not their thing. You play games with someone who's less of that core gamer demographic, right? And they just absolutely wallop you and everybody still has fun playing.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about that experience. It's almost like when you're a salesman and you put the product in the other person's hands and you can just tell that they're buying in. Whatever that feeling is, that's such a great feeling.
No, I agree. I've been a salesman most of my life, so I totally get what you're talking about.
I'll never forget. I'm going to tell this story because it is board game related. I'll never forget. I was visiting a friend. This was early aughts. It was before we were married. I was visiting a friend in Seattle and we went to some mall and I saw my first ever Games Workshop store, like the actual store where you go in and they had Warhammer set up on the table. And I'll never forget this. I started talking to the guy and he was such an unbelievable salesman because he picks up the box and he hands it to me and he says, "Here's your copy." And before he explains the game to me, and like in the back of my head, I'm this hypercritical, like I'm always calculating. And like, I knew there was no chance. I was basically a college kid. There was no chance I was spending $80 on a game, but I knew. I was like, man, you are a salesman. Like, well done. You know what I mean? It's just like, you have it together. This is unbelievable. So I don't know. That just reminded me of that story.
And then you crushed him when he spent all that time on you and you're like, I do not have $80 to spend.
Actually, I told him he was an unbelievable salesman, and yet I was still a poor college student.
Yeah, sometimes salesmanship cannot trump reality.
As a reminder that games are supposed to be about having fun, we played some Monza this week and also some Narwhal Free-for-All at the insistence of Elliot, the 6-year-old.
Yep.
Why my kids want to play water games inside instead of going outside and using, say, the slip and slide we got them. I don't know. But I am too tired to argue at this point. So
because playing with a little bit of water while in the air conditioning is better than playing with a lot of water while it's 90 degrees.
We weren't in the air conditioning.
Oh, I get
it. It was 82 degrees inside the house and 85 degrees outside the house. I don't know.
I got nothing. But I mean, Narwhal Free For All is a super adorable game.
It is. And Asher wiped the floor. His score was as much as the other three of us combined.
Wow.
So apparently he's got that flicking ring skill down.
Yes. Yeah, well, good for him. I got a chance to play Baby Dragon Bedtime from Tin Star Games.
All right. This game did not impress me at first when I saw the setup for it. But we found a speed game that is also a little bit of a memory game. And so both our speed game fiend and our memory game fiend both really enjoyed it and wanted to keep playing.
And that's all that matters. Sometimes if you just find the right game that fits the right set of, you know,
set of skills,
check boxes or whatever, it's perfect. And the speed game fiend is also the dragon fiend. So that
works out. Yes, so the dragons did help with that. Yep. Yes.
So you want to talk about Baby Dragon Bedtime? Because you've played it about a million times now.
Well, it's because later on I got asked to play it again and we kept playing until I no longer won. Because apparently this game I am preternaturally good at or something.
Oh, yeah. Just like, I don't know, every other game we played again?
Not every game. Baby Dragon Bedtime is a real-time game that is kind of like a deck builder-ish in the way it works.
That is not what you expected.
I know. You start with this tiny little deck of five cards and you flip them over one at a time and you do whatever it says on the card. So the ones you start with are grab, peek, and flip. The rest of the cards for the game are just out in a giant mess in the middle of the table. Like, this is the unorganized dragon horde of cards. And so then you flip a card, it says peek. You grab any card from the horde, take a peek at it, put it back as close to where you found it as you can. You take one of your cards and it says flip. You take any card that's out in the dragon horde, you flip it over. You know, if you're using your card that says grab, you are grabbing any card you want from the dragon horde, whether it's face up or face down. In that whole dragon horde, there are more of those action cards, but there are also gold coins, which are worth 1 point, horde cards, which are worth 2 points, and then dust bunny cards that are worth -1, and chewing gum, which is worth -2. You can also mix it up with putting a couple of other special powers out into the main horde that then get used every time you go through your deck again. And it's just this game of flipping over the cards in your deck as quickly as possible, stopping every time that you see one that has an action and doing the action, and just keep going as quickly as you can to try to put as much treasure into your deck as possible. The game ends either when nobody can pull anything else out of the horde, like there's nothing else there, or if all but one dragon has quote unquote gone to sleep, which you do by basically deciding that you are opting out, you put your hands over your deck and you're done. But everybody else can keep going while you do that. So you really only want to do that if you think you have a pretty decent amount of treasure. But it keeps everybody else from messing with your stuff, because a lot of the other action cards mess with your stuff. And that's the game. Once all but one dragon has gone to sleep, then you stop. Everybody counts up their points. And that's the game.
I have to say this because I always say things in the opposite direction. Tin Star Games shoved this entire game into a tuck box, which is fine, except once you start using the cards, basically it doesn't fit anymore.
They don't quite all fit back in. Right. So for all that Andrew talks about, like, this box is way too big, it could be much smaller, the game would still fit fine. This is one where maybe a double tuck box instead of a single would be helpful.
Might have been a little bit more helpful. Yeah. So anyway, but that's Baby Dragon Bedtime. It's a silly little quick game. Basically, anybody can play this, really.
Yeah. And the decks it comes with allow you to play with like 6 or 7 players all at once. And obviously, the more players you have, the crazier it's going to be and the faster it's going to go. But like even with 2 players,
chaos.
Even with 2 players, it's not more than 10 minutes.
I mean, you're talking to 2 people who've played Pit, you know, a fair amount back in the day. So if you want chaos, like, we're on board.
This is true.
So what else you got on your list?
Well, another game I played recently, probably something I'm going to bet that no one who listens to this podcast has ever heard of. And it is a game called Sumeria, put out by a now defunct little company called Reaver Games out of the UK. And in Sumeria, you essentially have a map board that has 8 city-states on it. And there's some setup involved where you pretty much just sort of claim territories. Each of the city-states is a territory, and it has a capital, and then it has cities, and it has towns. And that only matters for the sake of tiebreakers. But it's an area control game, and essentially, of the 8 city-states, you always have 3 that are going to score at the end of every round, over 6 rounds. And every time you add a worker to a city-state, it's a claim, reputation, whatever you want to call it, goes up. So you make it ascend a spot. And every time you remove a worker from a city-state, you make it descend a spot. And then you can move a worker from one city-state to another, keeping that worker on the board. And then the city-state that it moves to moves up. But the one that you remove it from doesn't go down. There's also some networking, in the sense that when I move a worker from one city-state to another, or actually I should say anywhere along a path, I can only move it as far as the next empty space goes. So if I've chained a bunch of workers together and I also take advantage of my opponent's workers, I could possibly move my worker quite far on the board. But once you get the setup done, it's pretty much an open information game, and you're just jockeying your workers back and forth on and off and around the board so that you have the majority in a city state at the end of a round when it's time to score. And as games go, it's super accessible. I'll admit that the story that it tells is a little dry, but I get a lot of joy out of, you know, trying to think ahead. What does the other player want? What, you know, how are they going to move their piece? And how can I either piggyback on that or prevent it from happening? You know, if I think they're going to move their piece within the board and try to follow a route, am I able to make a gap so that they can't get where they want to go? If they're jockeying for ascendancy in a particular city state, can I remove one of my people from that place and have it go down so that if they really want to score it, I've compelled them to take their next move and move it back up again. Mm. And yeah, it plays in about anywhere from 30 minutes to 45 minutes. And I don't know where you'd find it or how you'd ever get it, but it's a tidy little gem in my collection. And it's one of those that is just really rules light. And so it's easy to get to the table. Again, there's a touch of setup, but once that's done, it's a pithy game that you can bang out rather quickly. And I'm not saying that there's, you know, extreme value in going quickly, but sometimes it's nice to have that as an option.
Well, I mean, yes. You're talking to two parents. So, and this is the Family Gamers podcast. So we have a huge appreciation for games that can be wrapped up quickly. This really sounds a lot like one of those easy to learn, hard to master style games like chess or Go or something like that. Half the game is the mental part of it, where you're trying to get into the other person's head.
Yeah, you definitely need to, again, look at the city states that are going to score and then look at what other folks need to do and how can you either prevent it or piggyback on it. You know, I've often thought, is there another story we could tell in this game that would make it a little more graspable, a little more exciting? I'm not sure there is. I get what they're trying to do in the game, but I think the dry theming is probably what, you know, led to, you know, what is probably ranked as a rather mediocre game. But it, sure. You know, it stokes my fire, so I enjoy breaking it out.
All right. Awesome. Well, next game on my list is a game that I got a chance to break out with our older two kids, Asher and Claire, tonight. This was a game that is a little bit heavier that I think than Claire usually plays. It's a worker placement game. It's a relatively straightforward and I would say not quite novice level worker placement game, but it's not some deep complicated thing. And this is Harry Potter House Cup Competition. It absolutely was the theme that pulled her in on this. There's no question about it. Asher likes board gaminess. Yes. So it was not a surprise to see him appreciate the theme, but really want to get into this for the sake of being able to play a board game. And we got this in the mail 2 days ago.
A couple days ago. Recently.
From the op, who have been really doing just a fantastic job with all of their licensed IP stuff lately. And we got a chance to get it to the table tonight. It took a little bit longer than it says in the box because, you know, kids and learning and all that nonsense. But that is a very fun worker placement game.
I'm looking forward to trying it next time you pull it out.
Yeah. I think I might have driven the family crazy because the way that you track points in this game, there's a little holder. Have you seen any of the Harry Potter movies, Mark?
Oh, yeah, all of them. Multiple times.
So you're familiar with the hourglasses in the Great Hall with whatever the house points or whatever they call them.
The point gem.
So in House Cup competition, they have a little holder like that. It's like a rack, and it's got four basically plastic test tubes. And there's these crystals that you can put in them, which are the appropriate, you know, the red, the yellow, the green, the blue for Gryffindor and Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw and Slytherin. And so when you get victory points, you put them in the actual thing that represents the hourglass for the given house because you're playing as the houses. And I had this really loud, annoying. Yes. I was very much imagining like a Professor McGonagall style declaration of points for each of the houses when I was assigning points with these crystals. I might have driven my family crazy.
At least one member of the family.
We sit in the dining room. It's near the front of the house and all the windows were open. So I suspect if anybody was walking down the street, they were like, what is this dude doing? You know,
20 points to Gryffindor.
20 points. 10 points for Hufflepuff, you know, whatever it was. But we had a really, really good time with it. I think that there's a little bit of art design stuff that I found kind of annoying. And there's a couple of rule book adjustments I think they need to make for whatever their second printing or whatever. But all in all, it is a straightforward worker placement game. Claire said she liked it better than Harry Potter Hogwarts Battle. Okay. And I don't know if, like, I think the graphic design in Hogwarts Battle is probably better than in House Cup.
Okay.
But, I mean, maybe she just liked worker placement better than deck building. I don't know.
That could be too.
We had a really good time playing it. I definitely get the sense from them that this is a game that they're going to want to play again, which is great because it's a worker placement game. This is not a game that is like a pasted on theme. It feels like you're doing the things you're supposed to be doing. You play as a house. You have three members of your house and you're placing workers.
Three students, right?
Yeah. And you have to go to class and you have to level up in charms, in potions, and in defense against the dark arts. At the end of each of the seven rounds, because they're 7 years, you have challenges that you can face to get victory points. So you're gathering knowledge and you're gathering magic and you're growing the stats on your students. And the stats on your students are what enable you to complete lessons and complete challenges to get victory points.
Okay.
So they do a really good job of the theming. There's a little bit of graphic design stuff that I think the board looks a little bit bland. And I don't know if they did that because there's so much iconography that it would be too much. Like, for example, the Castles of Burgundy redo, like that board is terrible because there's just too much going on. But I think they're trying to strike a balance where it's not overwhelming to the players. And we definitely had fun playing. We're definitely going to play it more. I'm definitely going to talk about it more. So I'm going to stop talking about it now.
Okay.
Mark, did you have anything else on your list? Because we've got one more game that we played.
Yeah, I can bring up one more game that I played. And I played this with my kids. I mean, obviously, I'm familiar with it. But a couple of weeks ago, I did the Board Game Geek Gen Con interview. And I got the opportunity to talk about Endeavor Age of Expansion, which is the expansion to Endeavor Age of Sail. And it had been a while since I broke it out. But it just reminded me both how incredibly tight and how versatile the system that is in that game is. And so what I mean by that is when you play Endeavor Age of Sail, it's just really tight. And you look at Endeavor Age of Expansion and you wonder, how could this possibly be different? And what Jared Gray, the designer, did is he took all the symbols and he moved them around, put some different opportunities in different places, and it really makes for such a completely different and robust experience that it was just a joy and a pleasure. And now, full disclosure, for those who don't know, I am co-publisher of both Endeavor Age of Sail and Endeavor Age of Expansion. So, you know, take what I'm saying with a grain of salt because I'm in some ways tooting my own horn. But it was really just amazing. And, you know, if you are a Euro fan, if you are an engine building fan, this is the Euroiest, engine builderiest game that I think you'll ever have the opportunity to play. The last time I looked, it was number 111 or 113 on the top 100. So it's really high up there where we're hoping to eventually crack the top 100 because it's just a super popular game. So that's Endeavor Age of Expansion. Essentially, the story of the game is you are moving from Europe out into the world, establishing shipping routes and colonies, and just trying to, again, build that engine and accomplish more and more from one turn to the next.
Wow. So Andrew said we have one more to talk about, but he lied.
I'm a liar.
We actually have two more to talk about, but we'll be quick. These are HABA games. So the one that's going to be very quick is In a Flash Firefighters.
Are you going to talk about it in a flash?
Or in a snap.
That comes later.
Yeah, I know. In a Flash Firefighters is a pattern recognition race speed game designed for young kids. Definitely a yellow box HABA game. Everyone is trying to pull these little hose tiles out of the center and line them up to reach from their fire hydrant to their fire. And whoever gets to their fire first wins the round. And whoever wins three rounds, three little trophies, wins the game. I think it says a lot that, first of all, I gave myself a little bit of a handicap, but the final score was I won three and Elliot, who's six, won twice. So it was relatively close. And when we were cleaning it up, he said, "Wow, Mom, that was really fun, but really frustrating." Which, especially coming from a fairly young kid, is encouraging that even with it being that frustrating, and he did get near tears once or twice, that it was fun and he wants to play it again and he wants to improve at figuring out how the pieces go together so that he can win next time.
Victory!
So that's In a Flash Firefighters?
Yeah, from HABA.
The last game, we played this literally right before recording tonight, was a game that we talked to T about during our HABA interview during Gen Con. Yes. And they said they really liked it a lot, and that was Fiver Findin'.
Man, this game is great.
Holy cow. This game is awesome. So this is a game where it's a roll and write where you are competing against everybody else to find five shapes on your board. Imagine a game that is kind of like Boggle. But instead of letters, you have a 15 by 15 board of all of these different shapes. And what you need to do on your turn, somebody rolls the dice and everybody is rushing to find five shapes that contain the symbols on these five dice on your board. And the first one to find five, or basically give up, flips the timer over. Everybody else gets like 30 seconds and then the round is over. So the goal is to find five shapes. Each shape is five squares in size, but they're, imagine, polyomino, different orientations or whatever. And then you rinse and repeat five times.
Yes.
And that's basically it, right?
That's the game. Yeah.
They do a really cool thing where of the four boards that are in the box, I think there's four boards in the box.
Yes.
The white sides are different. So they all have like 15 by 15 or whatever the number is, grids of shapes, but they're laid out differently.
Yes.
The other side, the gray side, is the same for all of them.
Yes.
So if people are like really obsessed with like, this has to be as fair as possible and blah, 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 then you can use the gray bordered sides as an equalizer to make sure that nobody happens to have a better set of shapes on their thing.
Which we definitely did see a little bit in our game, but it didn't bother me.
I didn't care at all. I didn't care at all. And I was stunned at how immediately super, super fun this game is. And it's five dice and some dry erase markers and four of these boards or five of these boards. There's probably five because that's on brand.
There's four player boards and a scoreboard.
Okay.
So yes, five boards.
So there's five boards. You could play this like sitting in an airport terminal, right? Because everybody's board is hard enough that you can hold it and write on it or draw on it. So it's really, really shockingly fun, and it's inexpensive. This game's got to be $20, and that's Fiver Findin' from HABA.
It was cool.
Yeah. We're like, well, the kids have gone to bed. Let's play a HABA game. That's all we've been playing. Honestly, not that much. All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we are, in fact, going to talk about one more game. I'm going to make you talk about Endangered, Mark.
That's rough. Please don't put through that torture.
All right. We'll be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Mark from Grand Gamers Guild, and this is a Snap Review for Just Kidding. I have hijacked the Snap Review to take a moment to tell you all about Endangered New Species on Kickstarter right now. Endangered and the New Species expansion are cooperative. You take on the role of conservationists working to save the animals. The original game had tigers and sea otters, and this expansion adds jaguars, tapirs, sea turtles, elephants, and more. The goal of the game is to convince the United Nations to save the animals, all while fighting environmental destruction and helping to keep the animals alive. It is filled with good decisions that will keep you working until the crucial voting year. And let's not forget the adorable animeeples, little wooden tigers and otters and all the rest bringing the game to life on your table. Endangered has been getting rave reviews, and we even got a Dice Tower seal of approval. You can check out Endangered New Species and the base game on Kickstarter right now. As publisher, I give this game 5 out of 5 Tiger Claws, and that's Endangered and Endangered New Species in a snap.
Hey, wait a minute. That's not a normal Family Gamer snap review.
Yeah, I don't really know what happened, but it ended with in a snap, and that means we're back.
Sure.
Welcome back, everybody. We are back from our break, and we are here to talk to Mark, who is apparently surreptitiously controlling our feed, about Endangered New Species. So, Mark, you talked about it a little bit. You mentioned before this was a kind of a gut feel kind of thing. Talk about this expansion. I saw you posted something on Facebook, or you were answering some questions or something about whether or not, for example, you could put this expansion in the original box. And you said no.
Yeah, I don't think this is fitting in the original box. I wouldn't say the original box of Endangered is overstuffed by any means. I think when you lay it out, there's quite a bit of components and bits and bobbins that are in there. But I dare say that this next box is going to be even more full of stuff. And one of the things that designer Joe pointed out today is that from a cost perspective, from a production perspective, the expansion's actually more costly than the base game. But that's okay. I knew what I was getting into. You know, the biggest critical feedback we received was people wanted more content. And so that's what we wanted to give them. We wanted to give them a box with oodles and oodles of content. So we are kicking down stretch goals. And the box started out with 4 animal scenarios in it. We have added California condors. And having just gotten through another stretch goal tonight, the next one is for the 6th animal scenario in the box, which is called the Devil's Hole Pupfish.
Huh.
That is a lot of stuff in the box. I mean,
it's
at least 5 different kinds of animals,
mm-hmm.
possibly 6.
Yep.
With their associated impact cards. And
custom cut, like, meeples.
Yeah, the meeples are super
there's,
cute.
There's additional pieces and all this other stuff.
And there's now another role you can pick from.
Yep.
So another way to get players in the game and all of the things that go along with that. So more dice, etc. That's a lot. I mean, seeing as the original Endangered comes with 2 kinds of animals, 2 scenarios, which is still a lot for replayability because no 2 games are alike. You have different ambassador cards that come out. You have different ways the impact shakes out that sometimes maybe it's not so terrible and sometimes you feel like you're going to start losing right away.
I think a couple weeks ago we played the tiger scenario and I sent you a text message just out of the blue. And I was like, man, these poachers are the worst. I'm pretty sure it wasn't quite that PC, but
especially tough.
Yeah,
I think there were some swear words.
In oh this. Man, I don't know. Family show. Okay,
but yeah, you're right. I mean, so and there's each role started with 2 specialty cards, so that affects how you play. And of course, there's a board in the box, and there's the 5 roles themselves, all that have their own partially unique deck. So there was a lot of content in there, and we just wanted to beef that up even more. And it become very clear that that is what people wanted. And, you know, here we are 4 days in, and the campaign from a monetary perspective in 4 days has already exceeded what the original Endangered campaign did over the course of 21 days. And we are knocking on the door of having more backers. So this campaign currently stands at 770 backers, and the first Endangered campaign ended with 786 backers, and we still have 3 days to go. So it's
I think it'd be season
that if we see the final third of folks come in those last 48 hours, which is so typical of a reasonably executed Kickstarter campaign. Yeah, we could be looking at a pretty robust campaign when all is said and done, especially when the initial game was, much to my heartbreak, rather anemic and really left me scratching my head. Because I worked my tail off. But that's okay. Onward and upward.
Right, right. So because there's a pledge tier where you can get the base game and the expansion, I do want to take a minute and take a step back. I want to talk about the game Endangered and what you do in this game, because we haven't released our review for it yet. I mean, we probably could. We probably played it enough. But now I want to play it with the giant pandas before we actually do release that review. But why don't you talk a little bit about what happens in Endangered and why Endangered is so different from some kind of typical, like, go and save the tigers kind of game.
Sure. So Endangered, first and foremost, is a cooperative game, meaning that rather than play against each other, you are working together as activists attempting to save an endangered species that you pick. That's where all the scenarios come in, the tiger scenario, the sea otter scenario, and all of the other five, hopefully soon to be six scenarios in the expansion. Every character has a role. That role has special powers associated with it, and every deck is semi-unique. That is to say that every role has some unique cards that it can play, and then there's some overlap in the decks. And then over the course of rounds, which is determined by the number of players, you're doing three primary things. You are, first of all, staving off destruction, because if you ever run out of destruction tiles, the game ends and you lose. You are also helping the animals to procreate. You make mating pairs, and then you roll dice to see if babies are created. And if they are, the population grows and remains vital. And if not, if you eventually get down to one animal that cannot reproduce on its own, then you lose the game. And then the last thing you're doing, and this is the only way to win the game, is at the beginning of the game, you set out six ambassadors representing different countries around the world, all of which have a unique win criteria that you are constantly jockeying to place influence on these ambassadors and to meet their condition. So some ambassadors want to see a lot of animals on the board. Some ambassadors want to see very little destruction on the board. Some ambassadors need influence on them, and you combine that with a die roll. There's all sorts of levers that we pull with the ambassadors. And so the game, to your point, will be different every time, because out of the six, you need to convince four of them to say yes by having enough influence and meeting their condition. And so, for instance, if my memory serves me, France is a very difficult country to satisfy their condition. So very often when France comes out, I'm kind of like, we're going to ignore France. We're not going to do that one.
I felt that way about, was it Japan that came out? Oh, yeah. I think Japan's the one where you have to have like 16 cards in hands, and we were playing a two-player game. We're like, yeah, it's not happening.
Yeah. So there's an ambassador that wants you to keep cards in hand. There's ambassadors that want cards out on the table. There's Mexico wants players to have lots of money. So there's, like I said, Joe has designed it so that you're pulling a lot of different levers depending on, from game to game. It's probably the best way to put it.
That's the original game. You're trying to keep too many animals from dying, stave off destruction, get the animals procreate, and figure out how to convince four ambassadors that they, in fact, should vote to save the animal of the week.
Right. The animal of the week, of course. Absolutely.
Exactly. And of course, all the animals behave differently, because in the real world, they behave differently. Tigers don't stay together forever. So after they have a baby, the mating pair splits up. You know, sea otters are fighting the threat of spreading oil. Obviously, that's not a threat to tigers. Yeah, polar bears in the new scenario will be fighting melting ice. Elephants, their story revolves a lot around captivity. Sea turtles need to make it to the shore and then back out to the ocean, like their journey to survive. The jaguar tapir scenario is our first dual animal scenario and plays with the interdependence of two animals upon one another in that predator-prey relationship. So, So there's lots of things going on in both the original game as well as all the new content.
So I want to explore this a little bit, because I thought this was interesting. I noticed that, so you talked about the polar bears and the losing ice. Usually with the game, you're placing destruction tiles onto the board to limit the available space for the animals. I'm guessing that you're doing the opposite with the ice and the polar bears or something like that?
Correct. So polar bears, first of all, let me say that when people began to talk about expansion content, polar bears were probably one of the most often mentioned species. They're very niche in terms of, you know, where they occupy geographically and how beautiful they look with their white fur. And of course, they're sort of a representative species in the sense that, you know, the role that they play in the environment. But yeah, so polar bears survive on sea ice. And as we all know, as climate changes and the sea ice melts and reforms, but yet every year it reforms and comes back less and less, that gives them less land to live on. And so it wasn't a very big leap to say that polar bears had to be in this expansion. And yes, to your point, the sea ice will start out in the game and it will slowly disappear. And because the polar bears are mammals, you know, they know how to swim, but they don't live in the ocean. They live on land, on their land, as it were. As the sea ice disappears, that is their primary threat.
That is really cool. It's really taking that idea that the animals function differently and moving it to the next level. So now you've flipped the use of tiles as a bad thing to tiles being a good thing. And I'm really interested in this jaguar tapir dual animal scenario. That sounds really, really cool. I think that, you know, you mentioned before people wanted more content, that even though there are differences between the sea otters and the tigers, like, you still in some ways feel like you're playing very much the same game. And here with all of these different things, it's really different. Like, yes, the core obvious, mechanics yeah. are the same, right? The die placement thing and, you know, using all these different cards that you place the dice on and all this other stuff. But it's really turning a lot of those primary mechanics with destruction and these kinds of things on their heads and making it something that's totally different, even though it's still in some ways the same, which is really, really cool.
Right. And the animals themselves, you know, they all have unique threats to them. Obviously, the things that land animals, to be very stark about it, the things that land animals have to deal with are completely different from what sea animals have to deal with.
Yep, absolutely.
Sure. I'm also going to say, as we talk about how all the different animals interact with their environments and with each other and with people, it occurs to me that Endangered is truly an educational game. This is not a game where
that it's a game that educates, because we all have nightmares about Math Blaster and know that games suck.
And we've talked about that before. Like, there are games where you like playing the game and you learn some stuff along the way, or you like playing the game and it requires this knowledge base and might reinforce some things. I think this is a game where you will learn about these animals and the threats to their environment as a distinct part of playing the game and understanding how to play the game.
Right.
I agree. I think that is a very fair statement.
It's not incidental, nor is it something that's going to give you an advantage if you come in already knowing. It's an integral part of the game is understanding how these animals are threatened.
Right. Well, I mean, here's a perfect example. So you mentioned before the sea turtles, they have to make their way to land to lay eggs, and then they have to make their way back out to the sea. And Anitra said, oh, yeah, because that's how sea turtles reproduce.
How they reproduce.
We know that, but I can totally imagine us sitting down and playing this game with our kids and having them see this mechanic with sea turtles. Oh, wait, I've got to get them to the land and get them out. And then have them say, wait a minute, is that really how sea turtles reproduce? And then going and finding out more information about how sea turtles actually reproduce. And then when they see that that's real, then they're going to start to come back and say, well, hold on, do tigers really like not stay together like after they have babies? And then start to look at that and then use these relatively small factual nuggets and use them as springboards to actually find out things about tapirs and jaguars and California condors and all this other stuff. I'm imagining at this point, because this is just how my brain goes, some kind of like show and tell book report kind of thing that like our 9-year-old does, because he's going to be homeschooled this year, where the motivation for it was a mechanic that he saw in a game like Endangered and wanted to explore how it really worked out.
Yes.
Well, you know what? To that end, let me tell you a couple quick stories. I've gotten two distinct emails, one from a field, I might mess up his profession, but a field biologist in South America, and I think I want to say Peru, but I might be misspeaking, and another from a teacher in Alaska, both who have used this game in an educational setting and have written to me more than once just singing the praises of Endangered and saying how it has been embraced by their, in the case of the teacher, his classroom, and in the case of the field biologist, by the indigenous people. He actually sent me a picture where they had carved their own little animals and had just used the framework as a springboard to create their own version of the game for the animals that they knew. So
wow.
I mean, every board game publisher's dream is to make $1 million. But short of that, I cannot imagine a more flattering compliment than to just hear these tales of the system being that you provided being used by these far-flung people. Like, I've never been to Alaska. You know what I mean? These folks don't know who I am. I've been to South America. And yet somehow through the internet, they found out about it. They brought it in and are using it, you know, for educational purposes. And that's, I mean, man, that's amazing. So it is happening. Awesome. Absolutely. 100%.
That is super cool.
That is so cool.
I mean, especially we've talked a lot about game schooling and homeschooling and all the different ways that you can use games in an educational setting and the reality that all board games are educational, whether you think so or not. Mm-hmm. And then like that all preceded this whole situation we're in now. And there are so many more parents that are like, what are we going to do? You know, and I think those plans are starting to come together and some parents are.
I would certainly hope so, since some school districts have started already.
Yeah, some parents are kind of accepting the reality of some distance learning or homeschooling or whatever. And this is the kind of thing that can really, really be helpful for a lot of those kinds of situations.
Yeah, I am definitely planning on incorporating this with Asher because I asked him what kinds of things he wants to learn about this year because, you know, it'd be good to follow his interest a little bit. And he's like, I don't know, programming,
which is great for me.
Yep. But I meant like spaceships, animals, like something that we can use as a jumping off point for that touches all the fields of study that we need to do, you know, reading, writing, math, history, etc. And I am now thinking that Endangered might be a great jumping off point to get interested in studying tigers or sea otters or, you know, shoreline, coastline areas where sea otters might live or anything like that.
Well, yes. You know, I mean, with all the animals we have, if he does one report a month on an animal from Endangered, it'll take him almost the entire school year to get through the whole game.
There we go.
And I listen to a lot of podcasts, including Science Friday. And a couple months ago, there was a podcast about the Lake Shores of Indiana and the ecosystem there and the these very specific plants, multiple plants within the ecosystem that were endangered. So I also want to see scenarios that talk about not just fauna, but also flora and also about ecosystems like coral reefs. I actually listened to another coral reef podcast and through some research and internet snooping, worked my way into a phone call with a leading coral reef researcher so that I could get all the details of the cutting edge threats and conservation efforts and foisted all of that info on Joe because I'm practically obsessed with the coral reef scenario at some point.
That would be really cool. And again, what a way to twist the central mechanics of this game to offer something new and different, but still in the endangered ecosystem.
Well, see, and meanwhile, I hear you say lakeshore, and having grown up on Lake Ontario, I immediately start thinking about invasive species instead of endangered species, like the zebra mussel. Everybody on the Great Lakes hates the zebra mussel. They're terrible.
Yeah, that's there's invasive species that can be addressed. I don't know what the scientific term would be, but there's extremely large single organisms like I think it's in Utah. There's this forest called Pando.
Yes. And
it is a single organism that is being threatened by humans. So, you know, how does that play out within the system? So, yeah. And people are asking for snakes and great apes and insects and more fish. So, you know, if Endangered continues to be embraced, as long as we can keep things feeling fresh and different, we will keep working to provide more content because it's a great game that not only serves the purpose of being a game, but it serves the purpose of, telling an important story.
Yeah, and I think the framework you have here is great to explore all those different angles, and you can definitely see that with all of the different ways you're starting to branch out in this expansion.
Well, thank you. So then goal accomplished.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the Kickstarter. So you mentioned we're a couple of days in at this point. By the time this podcast comes out, we'll be about a week into it, which means you'll have about another week and a half to go. The Kickstarter for just the expansion, if someone already has the base game, is $45. But if they don't have the base game, they could go all the way. They could go whole hog for $99 plus shipping. They can get a copy of the original game plus this expansion. And I mentioned a couple of times at this point the Giant Panda expansion. You do specifically mention in the Kickstarter that the Giant Panda expansion, which is one more species, the Giant Panda species, will be available in the Pledge Manager after the fact as well.
Yeah, because the Giant Panda was a stretch goal that we never unlocked in the first campaign. So, and again, people were clamoring for more content. The people who have embraced Endangered have embraced it hard, and so they were... They're asking for it. So I, you know, priced it out and we made a small box expansion for Endangered and made that available. Now, I'm happy to say that, but for about 50 copies of the base game and about 40 copies of Pandas, Endangered is sold out. You might be able to find it in your FLGS, but so I do have some copies sitting in my garage that I can actually, you know, send out and sell during the campaign. But other than that, it's all going to be the second printing. And yeah, all the goodies from the original campaign are available in the Pledge Manager. The Tantrum House promo cards, the Center for Biological Diversity promo cards, the Panda expansion, people who bought it at retail but who want the custom dice, we're going to make those available as an add-on. So people will be able to get pretty much all the bits and bobbins and goodies and bling that they want.
Sweet. Do you have a target fulfillment date? I think I'm seeing September 2021.
Yeah, I'd be honest with you. I am an under-promise and over-deliver kind of guy. Yep. And so whenever I run a Kickstarter, I pretty much put it out for a full year. Originally, this campaign was going to end the first week of September. But because of the nature of the campaign, with it being an expansion, I didn't feel like having an extra week in there was going to lend to its success. Sure. So I cut it down by a week. We're ending in late August and have promised it by September of the following year. But if I have my druthers, we'll get it out much sooner. I just would rather tell you September and hand it to you in June than tell you June and hand it to you in September.
That makes perfect
sure,
sense to me.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well, this game is amazing. And I think anybody who has listened to the show for a while will probably be aware that of the two of us, Andrew and I am the cheapskate and I resist spending money on new games unless I'm really excited for them. I make no bones about it. If you as a parent think that you will be homeschooling a year from now in September 2021, I would spend the $50 or $100, get Endangered and these expansions. You will not regret it.
Well, I think I know what we're doing as soon as we finish up recording this podcast.
Seriously, though, the sheer amount of content here, all the things that you and your kids and anybody else you play with are going to learn and experience and just really get how all of these animals are being threatened in their various habitats. This is the kind of education that your kids will remember and hang on to, and it will make a lasting impact with them. So it is definitely worth $100. I spent more than that on textbooks this year. And this will probably stick in my kids' heads a lot longer than anything that they learned from a textbook this year.
It's more fun.
It's more fun. I mean, that's a big part of why.
So, Mark, anything you want to add before we wrap up the show?
No, that's it. If you've been so moved in our conversation, check out the Kickstarter page. I sure do appreciate it. And if you think it's a game that you and your family will enjoy, you know, back it at whatever level is appropriate for you. If you have any questions, shoot me an email through Kickstarter or through my website, which is grandgamersguild.com. And then, you know, find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram by searching Grand Gamers Guild.
All right. Well, that's how you can get a hold of Mark. Anitra, how can people get a hold of The Family Gamers?
As always, you can find us on all the social medias, not really all of them, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, at Family Gamers AA.
You can also email us. Mark's not the only person you can email. You can email us, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. You can join our Facebook community in which we discuss Endangered and many other great games.
This is true.
And how to cope with the various difficulties that arise in playing games with your kids. The easiest way to get there is go to thefamilygamers.com/community or search for Family Gamers Community on Facebook.
For anybody who is listening to this weekend, on the 22nd, I am going to be on the Charity Board Gamers live stream. He's doing an Extra Life live stream around 1 to 1:30 p.m. I am going to be shaving my head. This is part of a charity effort. We are working with One Mission, which is an organization that works with pediatric cancer patients. And they do this thing called the One Mission Buzz Off for Kids every year. This year it's virtual because of the pandemic. And it's just a kind of a fun thing that we can do. It's a way that we can show kids that we support them, that they are not different because they've lost their hair because of chemotherapy treatments or whatever. But I'm going to be on and my kids are going to shave my head. It's probably going to be hilarious. The parents of Kidsplaining are really, really invested in donating enough or convincing people to donate enough to get me to shave half of my head. I don't know if Anitra's going to let me do this, but I'm willing to. So if you go to thefamilygamers.com/buzzoff, it'll bring you right to the donation page for Buzz Off for Kids. We are matching the first $50 that has been donated. Our sponsor, First Move Financial, is also matching the first $50 that has been donated. So that first $50 turns into $150. Our goal is modest. It's only $250 for the campaign, but hopefully we'll blow right through that and, I don't know, maybe double it. I have no idea. But check out that live stream. We're going to continue talking about it on our Facebook. We'll tweet out some links and things like that. It's going to be fun, and the kids are going to have a blast. The only thing that I've said no to is a straight razor in the hands of my children. Everything else is fair game. So go to thefamilygamers.com/buzzoff to check that out. Or if you're listening to this on mobile, you can text FamilyGamersAA, our social media handle, to 44321, and they'll give you a link, and you can donate through that as well.
Last but not least, we'd like to thank our sponsor, First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points. And while you're there, say thank you to Donnie for matching the donations on our fundraiser.
That's right. All right. Anything else you'd like to leave us with, Mark?
No, I appreciate the time you've given me. I enjoy being on the show, calling you guys my friends. And, you know, hopefully we'll gather together at a gaming table and a food table at some time in the not too distant future.
All right. Sounds good.
That's my hope, too.
Yes, absolutely. All right. I think that's going to be it for us this week.
So until next week,
play games with your kids.